Ryan Seacrest here. Every great barbecue has one secret ingredient. Patience. You do a little, and you wait a little. And while your dinner does its thing, you got a few minutes to yourself, right? Well, kick back with a little Chumba Casino. A flip and a spin. Who knows? Maybe even a login bonus. It is the perfect recipe. Chumba Casino. Always good to have you back.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Monday morning. The Titans have completed the draft. Some really interesting picks that they've made here. A lot of beef in the first two picks. I love it. It's how football is played, baby. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 the game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in Titans general manager Rand Carthon. Rand, good morning. How are you?
Hey, top of the top. How are we doing this morning?
We're awesome. Good. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Rand, let's just start with J.C. Latham. As you guys were going through the evaluation process and you were talking with Bill Callahan and Brian Callahan and watching the film, what was it about Latham that really stood out to you that convinced you that that's your guy at number seven overall?
Well, I think you started off saying it. You know, he's a big man with unique length. And he's a guy, he's very, very athletic, you know, particularly for his size. And, you know, just someone that you ID'd early, very, very early. We were talking about it, you know, after we picked him, that he was one of the first guys that we watched last summer. And you just, you know, you saw the skill set and you just saw it all translate into how we want to play football.
And, Rand, obviously, I know right after you guys picked him, you said it to us, you know, at Titans headquarters, he's going to start out at left tackle. That's the plan. As you went through the process with him and discussing him, how much did you talk about that collectively? You know, can he play left tackle? How important is that ultimately?
Well, I mean, yeah, we definitely talked about it as you would with any of these guys. And it just, I mean, the way we really see it is in this game, you need two offensive tackles. The position is just offensive tackle. At this point, all these kids, whether you started off at left or you started off at right in college, you know, these kids, when they start training for the combine for their pro day, they train at both sides, and you get to see them at these combines and pro days playing from both sides, you know, in terms of switching up their stances. So it was a big part of it. But in this game now, most of the best rushers in the league now rush over the right tackle. So you have to have two in this league regardless.
As you went through, did you get a good feel for why he didn't play? Because obviously he played in high school, but I know a lot of guys play, you know, like left tackle in high school. They might play something else in college. But why he didn't play left tackle at Alabama in those 3 years?
Well, when he first got there and he started, they still had Evan Neal, and Evan Neal was the starting left tackle. And then after that, for them, it was a matter of just getting their best five. You know, at University of Alabama, they're always bringing in five-star linemen on both sides of the ball. And so they just felt at that time it was the best, you know, for them to be able to get their best five on the field. But like I said, regardless, have no worries, no reservations about J.C.
Rand, what do you think the addition of Tavondre Sweat does for your defense and specifically does for that punch up the middle alongside Jeffrey Simmons?
No, again, another big man that's going to provide some power, some strength in the middle, and he's going to, you know, eat up space in the middle. He's going to eat up space. He's going to free Jeffrey up. I mean, it's also going to help our linebackers out. It's going to keep those guys clean, let these guys run laterally, let these guys attack downhill without these, you know, having these guards come off and, you know, get a hand on him, because he's going to demand, you know, to him in most times.
You guys obviously went down there for extra time with him, you know, to talk about his incident and things like that, and I guess to make sure, right? I mean, that's the best, like, to really make sure about that. You said something interesting, Rand, after the draft about how sometimes these visits, like you mentioned Cedric Gray, you know, obviously linebacker, fourth-round pick, and I think the term you used was a clean prospect. So he didn't come in. You guys had information on him. You felt great about him. You didn't use a visit on him. But sometimes the visits, the 30 visits, are actually because you're not as sure. Like, how many of those, maybe off the top of your head, roughly, were because, you know, you had more questions about guys and decided, okay, this is worth bringing them in for that?
It wasn't very many. You know, and to clarify that a little bit more, like it's when we say have questions about them, it's not necessarily always a personal thing, but it could be a scheme thing to see how they fit with us schematically and to see how much, you know, they really know. And so for some guys, we just like to, you know, bring them in and get them more of a feel for. And, you know, Tavondre was one of those guys that we brought in. And like you said, we went down and saw him, you know, I guess it was a week or so later, just to spend more time with him. You know, unfortunately, the incident happened. You know, you can't deny that. That is what it is, and it's a situation we'll continue to work through with him and his representatives. But the trip down was more so, like I said, we were his first visit after the incident, and the kid was, you know, forthright with everything that happened. And, you know, he was just that day, he was defensive, and he was trying to clear his name. And so I wanted to really get to know the person as well as get to know the family some more. And, you know, because he was a guy that we identified that could help us. So I wanted to be completely sure, you know, that not only were we getting a good football player, but we were getting the right fit for us as an organization.
Rand Carthon with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Rand, obviously you guys have been incredibly active this offseason, both in free agency via trade and now with the draft. How much better do you think your football team is right now than when you began this offseason based on the work you guys have done?
I think we're better. I think we're better with all the additions. You know, and I can't wait to get all these guys on the field together, you know, to see how it looks. And so that's what I'm most excited about now that we have the draft over, because you can add in this draft class, and we'll continue to look to, you know, add players as we go. But I do think that we improved this offseason, not to be confused with, you know, being where we ultimately want to be. So there's still more work to do, but I'm pleased with what we've done so far.
The addition of Jaquan Jackson, ran in the sixth round. I mean, he projects as what you would call a traditional slot receiver, right? And I know, I mean, Kyle Phillips would qualify as that too. How important is that in this new offense coming in Brian Callahan's offense to have, you know, a traditional or a dedicated quote unquote true slot receiver?
Well, I also think Jaquan can play on the outside as well. As you guys know, in this league, it's always the more you can do. And him having that versatility, we feel the, you know, play X, Z, F, and also add, you know, value as a dual returner is just another, you know, explosive guy that we can find ways to get the ball and, you know, give him opportunity to make him explosive plays and make our offense go.
Rand, obviously, you know, Treylon Burks, a high pick for you guys, and I know that happened before you were here, but the production hasn't really been there in his career to this point. What have you seen from Treylon to this point in the offseason, and what do you think it's going to take to get him going as you guys head into next season?
I mean, Treylon's having a really good offseason. His attitude and his approach, you know, to the offseason has been excellent. He's been here every day. He's, you know, working extremely hard, you know, especially with our new strength and conditioning staff, you know, led by Zach Woodfin. You know, and now, you know, him getting with Coach Tolbert, you know, the arrow's pointing up on Treylon. Like I said, he's having a really good offseason. And, you know, the big thing for Treylon is staying healthy. You know, staying healthy, staying out there, and giving him more opportunities to get the ball. But I like where Treylon is right now.
Talking to Titans general manager Rand Carthon. Rand, it seems to me, when on paper, the position group that has improved the most, I think, is cornerback, and seems dramatically improved. And you guys were able to get Jarvis Brownlee Jr. out of Louisville here in the fifth round of the draft, but obviously the two bigs, a signing and trade to get Snead and Awuzie. So is that just how things worked out, or as you started out this process, was that a spot you identified and said that has to be way better next season?
No, we ultimately, I mean, that was a key thing. You know, going into this offseason is wanting to improve in the secondary, you know, get a group of guys in here that's going to play the brand of football that, you know, Denard wants and what Denard's used to, and, you know, as well as Chris Harris and Steve Jackson. So that was a real focus for us because, you know, as you know, this has become a passing league. You got to be able to, you know, have people to either rush and force them to get the ball out quicker. You got to have guys that's going to cover and create more turnovers. And, you know, with our offense and Cali coming in, you know, we want to give those guys as many opportunities as possible to put up points.
So, Rand, as we mentioned, incredibly active for you guys so far in the offseason. Now that the draft process is done, do you expect to still be active in the free agent market? What's kind of the next priority for you as you're running down your checklist here?
Get some rest. get caught up on rest. I thought I was going to be able to do that yesterday morning, and for a brief second, blanked on, you know, my daughter having her flag football tournament yesterday, which I'm glad to announce that the Ravenwood Raptors are three-peat champions this year in girls flag football. So kudos to the girls. But that's where my day was spent yesterday, three games, you know, and so it's been fun. But, you know, get caught up. As soon as we're done here, have meetings with, you know, with Anthony Robinson to kind of talk through some things and how we want to, you know, improve the process and do things moving forward. And, you know, part of that is continuing to look and see who's available on the street, how many roster spots we have, what positions we need to, you know, attack to get up to the numbers that we want to carry in camp. So it's never ending. You know, I was telling my wife that last night that, yeah, even though draft is over, you know, it's still the on season, you know, for us. So we're still working.
Is safety – obviously, there are some you know, accomplished veterans out there as possibilities. Like, how do you view safety where you are right now? Obviously, you have Amani and Elijah, some other guys, but is that a potential priority here moving forward?
Yeah, it's a spot that we're going to definitely look at. You know, there were some places in the draft that you'd like to go. That you would have liked to have gone, you know, during the draft to continue to add some, you know, some different guys to the room. You know, obviously it didn't work out for us, but, you know, didn't have to force anything either because, like you said, there's some accomplished guys there on the street that we would, you know, have a chance to take a look at.
Going back to the offensive line, just how much, because obviously for the last couple of years for this franchise, it's been an issue. How much better do you think it is, regardless of where JC ends up, with Peter going into his second year? Obviously, Cushenberry, I assume you saw the excellent catfish snap that he gave to Will Levis yesterday at Bridgestone. But how much better do you feel about that group and where it is?
No, I feel better about the group. I feel better about, you know, the man that's leading the group. You know, and not only Bill Callahan, but, you know, Brian Callahan, I think has been understated, you know, what he's done throughout his career in terms of protections and, you know, being able to understand protections from an offensive coordinator standpoint and different things that he can do to help, you know, make the offensive line better in terms of, you know, techniques, play calls and such. So I'm just excited about where we are. Again, still trying to improve and make sure that we're going to have not only the best five, but, you know, the best three guys still on the active and then some developmental guys that we have bringing along to, you know, come up through our program.
Well, Rand, really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. Hope you get some sleep moving forward here, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, guys. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks, Titans General Manager Rand Carthon, our guest here on Robbie and Rexrow. We'll react to what Rand had to say there. Take your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025, our phone number. You're listening to Robbie and Rexrow, 1025-1063, The Game.
And Rand, obviously, I know right after you guys picked him, you said it to us, you know, at Titans headquarters, he's going to start out at left tackle. That's the plan. As you went through the process with him and discussing him, how much did you talk about that collectively? You know, can he play left tackle? How important is that ultimately?
Well, I mean, yeah, we definitely talked about it, as you would with any of these guys. And it just, I mean, the way we really see it is in this game, you need two offensive tackles. The position is just offensive tackle at this point. All these kids, whether you started off at left or you started off at right in college, you know, these kids, when they start training for the combine for their pro day, they train at both sides. And you get to see them at these combines and pro days playing from both sides, you know, in terms of switching up their stances. So it was a big part of it. But in this game now, most of the best rushers in the league now rush over the right tackle. So you have to have two in this league regardless.
That was Rand Carthon on with us in the last segment, offering his thoughts on J.C. Latham and the idea of moving over to left tackle. And Joe basically answered that question like, you know, it's offensive tackle. It's not left tackle. It's not right tackle. Offensive tackle is the way he kind of views it now with the way that rushers line up over the right tackle now and all those things. What did you make of that response by Carthon in terms of the way they're viewing Latham heading into all this.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of how Brian Callahan answered it too. He's like, what matters is that he's a great tackle. And we've talked about all the things, you know, some teams that their better tackle is the right tackle, and it's a couple of the best offensive lines in the league can raise their hand and say that. So I know it's not satisfying. I do feel like some of the left tackle discussion is a little bit, I don't want to say archaic, but it's like it is a little bit old school. I mean, I think there is something. What he said there, I have not said. I'd actually really love to see a piece on or an analysis of what he said. He said most of the best rushers are on the other side.
Yep.
That's I would really love to know. You know, if you go through the best pass rushers in the league and what percentage of, because certainly some of those guys bounce around.
Sure.
That's the idea, right? I mean, if you're a D coordinator and you can move those guys around, that makes it even better. But that was an interesting, I mean, if that's true, well, that's interesting. I mean, I have not heard, you know, most of them are on the other side. But it's an unsatisfying answer, I think, obviously, when you think about it, like, they need to fix left tackle. So I totally agree with that. If he goes out and they want him to start at left tackle and he can't do it and he switches back, it's an immediate, like, disappointment, you know, early in his career. But some of the answer is also, okay, the other tackle, like this year, whether it's the right side or the left side, one, is Latham great wherever he is? Two, are you okay at least at the other one? And even if he does successfully take over left tackle and it's like, wow, look at this rookie and he made the switch and Bill Callahan has figured it out and it's great. Well, if you're crap at right tackle, that's still problematic, right? I mean, to me, what you have to have, I mean, ultimately, long term, you have to have, he has to be great. You pick him at seven. But what you have to have is, you know, the ability to, if you have to help one side or the other, fine. But then the other side has to be able to handle it. And that's what the Titans haven't had. Like, they've been, I mean, they've been worse than that. They've been just bad.
Brutal.
At both sides. Yeah. So you can't possibly give all the help you need to give. And so that's why so many things have stem from that to me, including people losing their jobs. I mean, that's part of the answer of people losing their jobs, I think, especially Vrabel.
So you get J.C. Latham in the first round, Tavondre Sweat in round two out of Texas. In the fourth round, Cedric Gray, inside linebacker from North Carolina. Fifth round, Jarvis Brownlee Jr. at corner from Louisville. Sixth round, Jaquan Jackson, wide receiver out of Tulane. James Williams from Miami, a safety in the seventh round. And then Jalen Harrell, edge rusher out of Michigan in the seventh round as well.
Williams, a linebacker. He was a safety, but he's a linebacker in the NFL.
So what do you make of the draft class as a whole for the Titans? Particularly, a lot of beef with those first two picks, Latham and Sweat.
I give it a B+. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not grading it. No, I like it. I think Sweat is going to be such – I mean, the first two picks, obviously, with any draft, are going to make it. Although – I could see Gray, Brownlee, Jackson all mattering, and that's great if you can go that deep. And I mean, I think James Williams, at least a special teams player, you know, potentially, but it's about those top two picks. Is Latham going to be great? And Tavondre Sweat is just like Tavondre Sweat as a player, you could say you got a bargain at 38. Tavondre Sweat as a prospect overall, a lot of people looked at that as a reach, but his. Yeah, if you look at like where he was on big boards pre-DWIRS and post, I think a lot of those guys just went they dropped him big time. And so I get that, but you have to keep that in mind. I think he's a tremendous football player. I watched quite a bit of him last year at Texas. I think we may have talked about him at some point in relation to the Titans.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think he's a fantastic talent, and it's just so much about, obviously, like, maturity and staying in shape and all these things and embracing Jeffrey Simmons as a mentor and just do what that guy has done, you know? And if you do that, not like Simmons didn't have like weight issues really, you know, but Simmons has gotten himself in the best shape and all these things to become a great player. And if he can, you know, do the things that they hope off the field, I think on the field he's going to be a real asset. And you're going to see those two guys really – disrupt offenses next year.
6'5", 366 pounds for Sweat. So that's a lot. That's a lot going on there.
Yeah. And by the way, real quick, you know, Dan Brugger in his huge write up on him said, you know, they believe that he was playing in the 380s last year. Now, he was playing awfully well.
Playing well.
And he won the Outland Trophy.
Yeah.
That's, you know, the best interior lineman, okay? So that's great. But what if he – I mean, he said the other day – I think he said, what, if he can get to 350, 355, he's a Hall of Famer?
Yeah.
I like the confidence. But, I mean, if he was playing in the 380s and playing like that last year and he can get to 355,
yeah,
he's not going to lose any power. And you think about the mobility and what he could be. He could be special. Also, it could be a bad pick.
Could be. We'll see what happens. They take a wide receiver in the sixth round. And we've heard from some people on the text line, I saw this over the weekend too, not addressing wide receiver high in the draft. Did you take that as confidence from the Titans on Treylon Burks?
I don't know that I'd go there. I think it's confidence. I mean, they have two really good receivers. So, obviously, you need more than that, but they have Burks. Look, make all the jokes you want. NWI is a reliable veteran who can go out there and play whatever, and he'll be a pro, and he can make some plays.
Block.
And then they get – that's right. He can block. But they get Jaquan Jackson. You know, the interesting thing there is Malik Washington from Virginia, a lot of people were on him. And frankly, I thought he was going to go way earlier in the draft than he did, and he went two spots later. And in both cases, you're talking about smaller guys who you think of, again, like I was asking the question around, they quote-unquote slot receivers. I mean, you can put anybody in the slot. You move people around. But still, guys like that typically don't play a ton outside. But they went with Jaquan Jackson. So I think that he absolutely, as a returner, and I think he could be in the offense. I mean, I think it's kind of like him versus Kyle Phillips for that role, right? So I would not over – analyze that as confidence in Treylon Burks. But what Rand Carthen just said to us suggested, I mean, I don't know. He you're not going to say, you know, he's having a really bad offseason. Really,
yeah,
really, not feeling great. But I thought he said more than you might say if you had no confidence, right?
He said the arrow's pointing up for Treylon Burks. So, I mean, you could take that for whatever you want to take it. I mean, look, I agree with him to a certain extent that it is about staying healthy with him. Now, it's also about playing better when you are healthy. But, I mean, you know,
making plays.
Carthon's not going to come out in the middle of the offseason and be like, well, yeah, he's got to be a ton better than he – like, I get it. But I did think that was some nice confidence projected from Rand Carthon towards Treylon Burks there.
Burks is obviously one of the most interesting players on the team. I think Nicholas Petit-Frere is right there with him too in terms of definitely some people have given up or out on those guys as they enter the third year in the NFL. I'm keeping an open mind on both of them, but we'll see.
Sean on the text line says they were all bad picks. There you go.
Okay.
They're all bad.
F. You F doing, for Sean.
You doing any draft grades at the Athletic? Those are always my
We've had some grades. I'll have to find them. I think the Titans actually did get like a B+.
So you personally,
like
you doing it?
Oh, man. No.
You going through the film?
Well, no, but I did come up with an idea today of analyzing the roster and percent of the way toward, so like 100% is like you, that position group is perfect.
Okay.
So like I said, at running back for 3 years in a row, they were 100 because Derrick Henry was that good. Like I said, offensive line last year, they're like 35.
Yeah.
That's how bad they were. But I went through each position group and percent of the way they are to 100. So
nice. I like
it. What position group would you guess was number one?
Corner?
Oh, easily.
Yeah.
Like not close.
Yeah, I would say so.
What would you guess would be the worst?
I will go inside linebacker.
You got
Boom!
It! Let's see. Let me get you the exact number. Very important. 47.
Okay.
I mean, you're talking about Kenneth Murray, we'll see, and Cedric Gray. I mean, I like the pick, but you're still putting a ton on a rookie, and then you got, you know, Jack Gibbons, Otis Reese, et cetera. I mean, if you're going to be there at a position, that's one of the better ones to be, but still, it's a concern.
No question about it. We'll take more of your thoughts on the Titans draft class. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. We'll also get back into the heartbreaking loss for the Nashville Predators coming up next as well. All that coming up. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Brought to you by Chuck McDowell and Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to medicalhousecalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Nick Keys are here with you, taking your thoughts on our phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Raymond Franklin says, B-plus, bunch of homers, LOL. This is from Raymond.
And yeah, someone else said apparently the NFL Network gave him an A-. So I said the NFL, the true Titans homers in the world.
Mm. Probably not.
I mean, all I know is, maybe I save this for the rant. Nah, well, whatever. All I know is if anybody didn't give the Falcons an F, you're an idiot. F. F-, Falcons. F is for Falcons in this draft. Thank you.
It is. It is indeed.
And for other words that any Falcons fan should have said as soon as they drafted Michael Penix.
By the way, God. Congratulations to me on our Joe Milton bet.
Yeah, yeah.
He goes in the sixth round to the New England Patriots.
Yeah, I blew it. I said, it's funny, too, because after the bet, I was like, because you would have given me, like, you would have given me more.
I probably would have given you the sixth.
Leeway. So, good for you. What's the bet? What are you, food now?
Yeah,
is
just
that the
lunch.
Deal? Okay.
Yeah, it's all good.
That's fine. You're getting a lot of free lunches out of the deal here
I
on the program. But I do still feel good for him. I'm glad that, like, it was close, you know?
Yeah.
I'm glad, like, it ended up being we were right around the right spot. I mean, he goes early in the sixth. good for him for being in the league, and we'll see what happens.
What did you make of Miami and their decision to take Jalen Wright? They've got A-Chain, however you say that dude's name down there. Mostert's down there. And now Jalen Wright.
Well, I think, first of all, I love him in that scheme. So,
A lot of speed.
Yeah. I think I almost kind of look like he's going to take Mostert's place.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of be the complement to a Shane.
Sure.
A Shan. Why can't we figure that one out? It's a tough one.
It's been a lot of different
A lot of
things.
People say it a lot of different
One time
ways,
it was A-Chain. So. That's what I'm going
yeah,
with.
That's
I'm
right.
hoping it's A-Chain.
But yeah, I mean, I love the pick from a schematic, you know, just like him in that scheme. And it was a little low for him. He was upset about it, but I think it could be good.
Joe, they're going through the final 2 minutes and 49 seconds right now on the NHL Network of the game last night between the Predators and Canucks. Preds up 3-1. They collapse late in the third. 2 6-on-5 goals by Vancouver to tie the game at 3. Elias Lindholm wins it 1:02 into overtime for Vancouver. And you go from on the doorstep of a 2-2 series with two games in a row where you've played pretty well and injury questions for Vancouver, not just with the goalie, but Quinn Hughes to me doesn't look right. And, you know, Rick Tocchet was basically saying last night, I mean, Predators are doing a pretty good job of running him and they've hit him pretty good in this series. And there was a play last night, I think it was Sissons and Jankowski maybe, where they got mashed up there. And Quinn Hughes was just doubled over on the bench after that, and it looked like he was in a pretty severe amount of pain.
Yeah.
So, like, there's some injury questions for Vancouver moving forward here, but that's about a four-minute span there in terms of game time played of just pure disaster for the Nashville Predators last night. And that feels like it's not technically a series-clinching loss, but, man, does it certainly feel that way this morning.
Yeah, this is NHL Network up here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of good shots of, you know, crowd reaction and even some player reactions to Jerry Lozon that I hadn't seen earlier. I mean, it's, you know, what do you, I mean, it's an absolute gut punch. So, and for the fan reaction there, too, you know, you get some kids crying in a Yossi jersey needing to be
consoled.
Consoled, yeah. Just stunning. I mean, just stunning the way that game just completely dissolved and just went right through their fingers. I mean, it really is. It's gonna be one we talk about.
Yeah,
and maybe it'll be one we talk about because it was like the Dallas game and with the U2 concert and they flipped it around and went on a run. But I don't think that's gonna happen, and I think that this is gonna be right there with the worst playoff losses the Nashville Predators have ever endured.
I said this last night, I've said it a couple times today. Like it is amazing to think about how much different the conversation is today than I thought it was gonna be with 3 minutes left in that game last night. I mean, they had done everything right in that game. They were dominating. I thought they played a great third period up until that point. You scored 12 seconds into it. I thought when Forsberg scored that goal, based on the way they were playing defensively in that game, I was like, that's it. I mean, it's a lock. Like, if they just got to lock it down here, and we would be talking about a 2-2 series where you can make an argument they probably have deserved to win three, and you've got injury questions with Vancouver moving forward here, and I would have been feeling pretty good about their chances to win two out of those next three based on what we've seen to this point in the series. And instead, 4 minutes have totally unraveled this thing, and we're talking about being on the brink of elimination, a Vancouver team that committed highway robbery last night, got away with a win, and now is going to be going back to their building with a chance to close it out. That four-minute span, it's about as dramatic of a difference as you could get in terms of the way you now view the series.
Yeah, because now you have to win all – got to win three in a row if you're the Preds. And, of course, they're right. You just start with one. You start with one, and you surprise everyone, frankly, and you get back to a home game Friday night. Hey, you put massive pressure – you know, you can start building the pressure on them, but it's not just what this does to the Preds to play like that and to be in such a prime position, 2-2 with them all banged up and not sure who's going to play and goal and all that stuff, to where you are now.
Yep.
It's not just that. It's what that does for the Canucks. And the Canucks are sitting there really getting dominated yesterday. And knowing up now, not only do you get the 5-hour flight home, you're going to get one right back out here, guys. Sorry. And, again, having their own uncertainty about their goalie and their star defenseman. And now they have to have a huge burst of energy from this to know that they can close this out Tuesday.
Yep, no question about it. Let's quickly go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Adam in Portland. Adam, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, man, real quick. So I was going to talk about the draft, but you guys just got me so fired up about this hockey game again. I was going to ignore it, Robbie, honestly, because I'm like, you know, it kind of is what it is. But didn't that feel like the Anaheim game from the Cup run? You know the game I'm talking about where we just had no business winning that game? And I don't know. It feels like we put 10 shots on goal the whole game, but most of them
game
went
five,
in. That's what it felt like to me. Like, and there's a lot of people right now, if your social media looks like mine, who's like really hard on this team, but I'm not, dude. Like, I feel like they look like a team who didn't know how to win that game last night. You know what I mean? Like a team that just don't have the experience to do it. And a lot of these guys have not been in the situation, have not been in the, like, with the coach. You clearly lost on special teams. Like, 5-on-5 was great, but then you lost on special teams. So, like, I don't know. But I'm not down on them, dude. I feel like they've got so much upside that I've just kind of like, is what it is, man.
Yep, thanks for the call, Adam. Problem with that is, though, the guys that do have a ton of experience were the ones making mistakes last night. And we've talked about this before, and we've had a lot of people asking about the offseason today, and I get it. The one part of this that I will talk about, like if this comes to an end, whether it's game five, game six, game seven, whatever it is, the one part I do worry about moving forward here is, well, Luke Evangelista as a forward is the one young guy. Like, you could talk to me about Tommy Novak being young. He's not young. He's 27 years old. Like, Luke Evangelista is the one young guy they've got at forward. I really like the way he's played for the most part. I think he's going to be really good. Other than that, I mean, Tomasino's in Milwaukee. Parsonen is not playing in the lineup right now. Like, there's still a lot of questions with the young guys that they have there. How much different is the team going to look like next year? But that's the concerning part from yesterday is, like, you know, it's Forsberg making mistakes, O'Reilly making mistakes, Yost. Like, you had your veterans out there. That's a pretty veteran-loaded team that they had out there yesterday.
Yeah, no doubt.
That has won.
Right. I mean, Nyquist and O'Reilly were on the ice for all three there in the last 3:51. At one point, Jankowski was in for Forsberg.
Yep.
And then you had either Yossi, it's some combination of – I guess actually in the overtime goal, it was actually Shen, McDonough,
yep,
were the two defensemen out there. But it was not their mistake. But, yeah, it's the veterans who made the mistakes. And the young guys, there just aren't a lot of them right now who are obviously going to be important for this team. So there's this gap, you know, coming here,
yep,
unless you do some pretty significant changes, potentially.
615-737-1025, our phone number. Coming up next, the Rex Rant with Joe Rexrode. You're listening to Robbie and Rexrode, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Glorious. I love it here.
I smoke weed constantly.
It's so stupid. It's a terrible song.
Glorious. And I will defend. I will defend.
It is that time of the day. Time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road. You can check it out every morning here on the show. Little Glorious Domination bring us back in, which they did play before the third period last night.
Yep, they sure did. And it's funny because some people were tweeting at me about that.
I saw that.
Remind me of the final score again.
4-3, Vancouver.
They win or lose? I forget. They win. What happened? Actually, I do want to talk about that. I want to talk about blame for last night's game.
Okay.
Because I couldn't help but notice this from ESPN's Greg Wyshynski, who does a very good weekly hit, friend of the show, but also a weekly friend of Chase and Big Joe. And I always enjoy that segment. So I saw this and I'm like, really? He says, quote, seeing a lot of, quote, Andrew Brunette can't coach in the playoffs from Preds fans, which was basically why Florida moved on from him. Of course, a lot of negative thoughts are conjured after a disaster like tonight. So first of all, I have this question. Actually, I'd like Chase and Big Joe to ask Greg. And you tell me if you're reading it the right way. So he says, I'm seeing a lot of Andrew Brunette can't coach in the playoffs. And then comma, which was basically why Florida moved on from him. Is he saying Preds fans are saying he can't coach, which is why? Or is he just saying they're saying that, and then he's saying, comma, well, which was basically why Florida moved on from him? I'm like, wait a minute. What are you saying here?
I would love to know that. Because to me, like if you're – first off, like Florida making that determination after one playoff run
against the Tampa Bay Lightning
and then lost to the eventual Stanley Cup champion would be a take.
Yeah. I mean, that's wild.
Also, I've seen a lot of things in the aftermath of last night. My mentions were filled with a lot of different ideas. Very few of them involved, like I don't think any of them involved Andrew Brunette.
Well, and that's the thing is obviously something like this, you go to the mentions, of course, to see like, okay, so is there a whole lot of, yeah, or is it just like, no, that's not what, and I will say, now I don't ever go to Pred's Facebook, so I think that's where you find the really sweet opinions.
It's quite a place.
But I say for the most part, everybody on here is like, no, that's ridiculous, et cetera. There is one person, though. At DetroitRN.
Okay? Sure.
Okay. Says, he's been unwilling to change when it isn't working. Beauvillier completely ineffective with goal scorers like Glass sitting on the bench.
Good Lord.
Okay.
The obsession that some people in this fan base have with Cody Glass is beyond me. I don't for the life of me understand it. Guy hadn't done anything all year.
I mean, I think Beauvillier has been – I think he's been fine.
Yeah, he's been fine. He's not been great, but he's been right. Fine.
They have a lot of guys who aren't great who are forwards. I think that a lot of their forwards are actually playing pretty well. I think especially a lot of their fantastic bottom six forwards are playing pretty well. Yeah. So, anyway, I actually feel – I'm a little tired, so I can't come up with words to say. Feel better about, you know, the reaction from Preds fans to this. I don't think a lot of people are doing that, but I have seen at different times. I got into it with somebody about Saros last night.
Yeah,
I just take it away from, is it good enough? Is he going to get an extension? All that stuff. I would not put Saros on the blame list at all. I would not put Brunette on the blame list. And another guy that I really think it's an agonizing moment, but Colton Sissons, that was not an easy play. Yeah. It was, of course he'd like it back. Of course he's going to have a nightmare about it. Yeah. But I just – putting blame on him for that is a tough one. I mean, look, they made some killer mistakes. I will ask you this, though. These mistakes, they've had these mistakes. I know every team makes mistakes. But they have had some late-game breakdowns and issues in the D zone. I mean, is there something there? Is there a theme there? that's a little bit too much. Take, you know, not just last night, obviously, but just through the season.
Well, I think clearly you got to look at your extra man strategy, right? Like, it's happened a couple times to him this year where they've gone 6-on-5 and it's ended up in the back of the net. Now, down the stretch, in the second half of the year, after they got their doors blown off by Dallas, they were fantastic at closing out games in the third period. So you have to factor that into it as well. I don't know that it's necessarily like a coaching thing. Like, again, I'm with you. Like, I don't think you can blame Colton Sissons, but if he puts the puck in the net last night, we're not talking about a blown lead.
It's a misplay. Right? It's a misplay.
So, yeah, for sure. Like, 6-on-5, you got to find a way. I know you're at a disadvantage from just a number standpoint, but you can't let Brock Besser just be all alone, right? Like, you can't let that happen. So there's certainly, I think, some tactical things they can do. The one coaching decision that I have a problem with in this series is I would have taken Novak out last game. Like, I he's been so ineffective that I think you're waiting on him too long. And look, I'm not convinced that had you put a Juuso Parsonen or a Cody Glass in, that it makes that big of a difference. Like, neither one of those guys this year have done at the NHL level enough to make me just totally confident in them. But that's probably the one coaching issue that I have in this series to this point. I'll tell you another one that creeped up last night in my mentions a lot, and it was reacting to a quote that I tweeted out from Yossi. We got real deep from Pred's Twitter last night back into the Yossi doesn't need to be captain part of this discussion again.
Oh, there's a
– real deep back
there's
into
there's a tried and true one. If he would have been screaming in those last few minutes, that would have made all the difference.
I fully understand that after the game, what you don't want to hear is, particularly in a game like that, where it ends the way it does, what you don't want to hear from anybody is, that's just hockey, right? Sometimes it goes your way, sometimes it doesn't. We got to forget about it pretty quick. Like, I get it. You don't want to hear that if you're a fan. I also think sometimes there are totally unrealistic expectations of what you think a player is going to say after that. I think some fans want him to get up there and be like, we suck, it was terrible, we are just atrocious for allowing that to happen, and you're never going to hear anybody say that.
Well, you're not going to hear Yossi say it for sure. Like, yeah. I mean, you were like, you thought maybe it might be a little bit more of like, at least.
I thought it was going to be a little bit more subdued than
like
it was.
A Nyquist. Nyquist was definitely like,
Nyquist
please
wanted
get
no
away
part
from
of that
me.
Stuff last night.
Don't talk to me. Yeah. Yossi talked about it matter of factly like he always does. That's
he did.
What he, but I mean, I don't see how you can get mad at him for that. By the way, speaking of Blake, I'm watching this. I am no hockey coach, nor will I ever be. I don't know how to ice skate. But I'm watching this goal to make it 3-2. Man, it looks to me like O'Reilly really screwed that one up. Like, really screwed that one up. So
he's pretty open.
You want to take some blame. You know, the veterans, the serial winners who are on the ice at the end who gave up these goals. I mean, that's where you look.
I low-key think it was McDonough's fault.
The 3-2 one? The one to make it 3-2?
The winning goal.
I'm not talking about that. No, I don't think you're right.
The winning goal was not McDonough's fault.
I think those guys were doing what they're supposed to do. The forwards out high is totally botched the coverage.
We don't have enough time. I think if he finishes his hit, there's not a play.
Okay. I'll look at that again. But I'm talking O'Reilly. I'm the one that makes it 3-2. I don't know what the heck he was doing there. But Brock Besser's like, thank you. I'll be right alone here. Thanks. Yeah.
Coming up next, we'll be joined by Corey Curtis from News 2. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Looking for a little Hollywood-style fun? Check out Ryan Seacrest's 10K Ways exclusively at Chumba Casino. There's 10,000 ways to play. Get spinning for free at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.